This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, December 9th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kalamus.
And I'm Christina Thomas. In just a moment on Ozarks, a big week for Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. The museum has a new partnership with the Louvre in Paris and a new gift that secures the future of hands-on education at the museum.
And later, a different kind of movie house in Fort Smith gets ready for its debut. The KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway will be held on Thursday, December 15th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. The drawing is your chance to win a gift from one of many KUAF underwriters and program sponsors. Participants include Opera in the Ozarks, Arcega's Espresso Cafes, Deborah Dubois Massage Therapist, and Newton's Jewelers. Registration and more information available on the web at KUAF.com.
Over the past few months, Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art has been the recipient of a number of financial gifts. Yesterday, officials at Crystal Bridges announced another one at a small gathering inside the Experience Art Studio. Ozark at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended the event and has this report.
Often when visiting a museum, there's a strict no-touching policy. At Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, families can have a hands-on experience while visiting the Experience Art Studio. Yesterday, a group of local school children and museum staff members were on hand at a small gathering to acknowledge a $1 million gift from the Shoemaker family. The gift will benefit the hands-on educational programs of the museum. Melba Shoemaker attended the event along with other members of her family.
The arts have always been a very favorite thing in my past. And with, like I said, what the grandchildren always did at home, and we always had drawings and paintings, and this just seemed a natural to for me to have to provide the funds for them having supplies and keeping it all up to date. And when something breaks, there's the money there to, you know, have it fixed. So it just seemed natural to do the interactive art gallery. So they had the money each year.
Museum Director Don Bacigalupi explains the Experience Art Studio is a drop-in studio for children and adults to experience art from a variety of different perspectives.
Some of the highlights are a listening station where you're asked to put on headphones and hear a verbal description of a work of art, and you're asked to draw what you hear. So it's about listening skills related to looking skills. It's kind of the reverse of the typical museum tour. And then there is the connect area where you're asked to take two works of art from the museum's collection and draw a connection between them. So for instance, if you choose two portraits, you might say, what does Dolly Parton have to say to Bill Clinton? Two works from our collection, and what do these two works have to do together? It's a way of constructing narratives and connections across the collection. Other spaces include dress-up areas where children particularly, but some adults, can dress up in the costumes of people depicted in some of our works of art in the galleries and play at different periods in American art history.
Next door, there is a whole range of workshop studios where families can drop in and participate in art-making activities. Bacigalupi says the workshop studios have been a great hit, and he has seen thousands of guests take creations home as souvenirs of their visit. He says the studios provide different ways of learning through art.
Well, we knew that we wanted to have spaces for families to learn, and we acknowledged that a lot of our visitors are coming to a museum for the first time. So we wanted to kind of break down the barrier of going into a gallery cold, so to speak, and have a way in, a kind of access point for people to understand from their daily experiences of play or conversation or listening, to understand that artists have these same experiences and works, great works of art come out of those same kinds of ideas. So this is a kind of entry point and access point for works of art. It's also a lot of fun.
The recognition ceremony came on the heels of another big announcement for the museum. Earlier in the week, Crystal Bridges announced a four-year partnership with the Louvre, the High Museum of Art in Atlanta, and the Terra Foundation of American Art in Chicago.
And the partnership will provide a series of exhibitions that we will jointly curate and will travel to Paris, to Bentonville, and to Atlanta that will focus on aspects of American art and American art history. And the first one will open at the Louvre in January of 2012, and then we'll travel here to Bentonville in the spring in May of 2012. And this first one focuses on the kind of advent of American landscape painting with Thomas Cole, a great painter who's well represented in our galleries. So that will be very important for the European audience, particularly at the Louvre in Paris, to see American art at its very beginnings, and then that exhibition will travel with all of those contributors, collection material, paintings from the Louvre, from the High Museum, from the Terra Foundation, and from Crystal Bridges, and that show will travel. Then that will be succeeded in 2013 by another exhibition focusing on a different aspect of American art history. So this partnership will continue for the next 4 years, and then will culminate with an even bigger exhibition in the fifth year, which we've not yet announced, but that's something to look forward to.
Bacigalupi will travel to Paris in January to launch the exhibition and the beginning of the partnership at the Louvre. While abroad, he will speak about Crystal Bridges at a symposium. He says he's looking forward to presenting Crystal Bridges, all that it represents, its collections, and its ideas in Europe.
We are blessed by having great colleagues around the world, and they're very interested in what we're doing, what we're collecting, the exhibition programming, the educational programs that we're creating. And indeed, institutions like the Louvre, who are obviously much older than we and most museums in this country, they are deeply interested in what's happening in North America, what's happening with American art history, and they want to be able to provide those experiences for their audiences in Europe. And, of course, the Louvre draws visitors from all over the world, so it's a great benefit to us to share our resources, our intellectual resources, and our collections with audiences abroad. So we're very excited about it.
More information is available at crystalbridges.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You've got to come to, they're building a museum for the kids.
This is Ozarks at Large. For families who've lost a child, holidays are not the easiest time of the year. Since 2007, a church in Fayetteville has been helping these grieving parents and family members come together for a candlelight service during the holidays to honor and remember their children. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolkar has the details.
The Rolling Hills Baptist Church in Fayetteville will host the fourth annual worldwide candlelighting event this Sunday for families who've lost a child. The event intends to honor and remember children who passed away at any age. The church's pastor, Steve Sheely, says the service was started in 2007 at the request of a church member.
It came out of a church member who lost his 21-year-old daughter and heard about services like this that were done for parents who've lost a child. And he asked me to see if we could do this, and we've been doing it ever since.
The candle lighting service is the local version of a worldwide event organized by Compassionate Friends, an international support group for families and friends who've lost a child. The international organization encourages local groups to host candlelight services on the second Sunday in December at 7 p.m. local time. The idea is that candles are being lit every hour around the world in honor of these children. According to Sheely, coming to the event helps grieving families find support and empathy among themselves.
More than anything else, it's knowing that they're not completely alone and completely crazy, that there's other parents out there who are dealing with the same thing, perhaps in different ways, but there's people around them who can be empathetic and understand what they're going through, where a lot of family and friends are kind of ready for them to be over it. But it's not like that.
Sheely thinks the lack of awareness and understanding of the process of grieving makes this time of the year especially hard for families who've lost a child. Danielle Hudson and Susan Averett of Fayetteville have been participating in the candle lighting service the last couple of years.
My son DC was 19 when he died, and again, I will always have a void. I'm in a place now where I have peace, and I'm so truly grateful to have had him for the time that I did. He was fun, energetic, ornery. In his passing, well, for years, he touched so many people that I had no idea.
One of the things that we said about Cameron when she died was just, because she was five, is that we couldn't ever remember her having had a bad day. You know, when you're five and you have two parents that love you and a family that loves you, it's pretty good. You know, it's a pretty good life. And she never really had to hurt. She didn't have to suffer, and she didn't have to make choices that were negative impact on her life. She was able to just live and make friends and be happy and bring joy to us and to other people around her.
According to Daniel and Susan, the process of grieving is a long, arduous journey. There are good days and bad ones, but talking about their loss helps.
For me, it's continuing to share memories of him. It's been very helpful to be surrounded by people that will talk about him, will listen, and not say, I know how you feel, or are you not over this? No, I'm not over it. You know, they say time heals all things. It helps. None of us will ever be healed. But again, knowing that there are others that really know that hurt is very helpful.
There's lots of things that help. There's lots of things that we do. I mean, I think we all do to remember Cameron and in her honor and in her memory. We do things for other people. And, you know, we do things for our kids, and we raise our kids in a way that helps keep, you know, we talk about it with our kids.
Susan says parents who've been through the same ordeal understand without having to say a word.
I think I'm crying more for you than I am me.
And that does. The people that have been through it are the ones who hurt the most for us, I think, because they know, like, when I come to this service, the people will say, are you the one that had the five-year-old? Because you tell, you know, about your child a little bit in the service. You know, because some people have the 19-year-old or the, you know, adult child or the child that had, you know, lifelong medical problems, and we all have our little different story. And are you the one that had the five-year-old? Yeah. And it just, and they hurt for you, and you're okay with that because you know that it's not, they're not thinking, gosh, I'm glad it wasn't me, because it was them too.
The Rolling Hills Baptist Church also runs a support group for grieving parents, of which Danielle Hudson is a part. She became a member after looking and finding no support groups in the area except this one for families who'd lost a grown child. Susan Averett was initially a member of a support group based in Rogers that is for parents who suffered a miscarriage or had lost an infant. She joined the Rolling Hills Baptist Church support group because it better suited her needs. Taking part in the annual candle lighting service for Susan and Danielle is part of the healing process.
It just is. It is an opportunity to come memorialize. Just take that one moment to be with others who are in the same situation, and to honor my child, and for others to honor their children. It's very comforting, and losing a child is different than losing a parent, a grandparent. I've had people die, and it's very different. The grief of losing a child is very different than anything I've ever experienced.
And I would say that for me, and I would think for a lot of other people, when something of this magnitude happens tragically in your life, I just felt very abandoned and alone and separated from people who couldn't understand, and also from my spiritual connection with, you know, my image of what I thought God was and is. And so for me to have a service where I can come and make a spiritual connection with God and also with other people in that environment who have been through that, it helps you to not necessarily feel isolated and abandoned spiritually.
Pastor Steve Sheely of Rolling Hills Baptist Church will lead Sunday night's candle lighting service beginning at 7:00. The event will include prayers and readings and live music.
Well, as people come in, we will invite them to write their child's name and one word describing their child on a Christmas ornament, and we'll hang it on a tree out here. And then people will come in, there'll be some music playing. I'll introduce the speaker. This year it's Paul Woodhouse, chaplain at Washington Regional Hospice. We also have a concert cellist who's going to play. And parents are also invited to come up and light a candle and say something about their child. And then after the service, we have a reception, and they can write a message on a balloon and release it. And we encourage all the parents to bring a picture of their child, and they can put them out on tables and talk about their child.
Susan and Danielle hope and encourage families and parents who've lost a child to participate and share their stories with other grieving families at the candle lighting.
I would tell them, I hope you come. If you can't or if you don't, that's fine. Because it's really just for you. And if you're not ready, then don't do it for someone else. But when you are ready, come, and you'll be surrounded by people who understand. Even if you don't know them, there's an instant connection between you and these other people. And also, you know, it's the holidays, and that's very stressful and hard. And this is a place for you to come and sit down and remember and think about your child and make that special connection with them in a spiritual way.
Very well said. Especially the holidays, you get so busy, and to just stop and remember your child for that short time. We all have that void that will never be filled. There's an understanding, there's a comfort, there's love, there's peace. It's just really a blessing to have that time.
Pastor Sheely says the event is ecumenical, but parents and families of all faiths are welcome. The worldwide candle lighting service for families who've lost a child will be held at 7 p.m. this Sunday at Rolling Hills Baptist Church, 1400 Rolling Hills Drive in Fayetteville. For more information, contact Pastor Steve Sheely at 521-2660 or log on to rollinghillsbaptistchurch.net. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mutholkar.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. We just heard from Ithi Agnihotri Mudokar, and she is with us in the new studio. Hi, Ithi.
Hello.
So, Ithi, you just gave us the story about Rolling Hills Church and their candlelight service. Mm-hmm. And you said there was something else, that when you talked to the mothers who lost their children, they had something else to say?
Yes, there was. And I'm sure that, you know, a lot of us go through this, you know, when we meet a parent who's lost a child, we don't know what to say. And especially during the holidays, it's a difficult time. And we kind of see parents who are doing okay. We think they're doing okay, but they're not. So these parents who I talked to, these mothers, they said, if during the holiday you could just walk up to a parent who's lost a child and just tell them that, you know, you remember their child, and just tell them that you'd be thinking of their child during these holidays, and just give them time to recover or grieve, you know, and not expect them to get over everything really fast, or even like in maybe 5 years or 6 years, because it never really goes away. So that's what I wanted to tell people.
All right. Thank you, Ithi. Good story as well. And a candlelight service for families who have lost children will also be held this weekend in Fort Smith. An interfaith memorial candlelighting ceremony begins at 6:30 Sunday evening in the Sheffield Education Center on the first floor of Sparks Regional Medical Center. For more information about that, sparkshealth.com. Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman says he's looking forward to questioning former Senator John Corzine about the collapse of a futures brokerage firm. Senator Bozeman and other members of the Senate Agriculture Committee voted to subpoena Corzine, who was the head of MF Global for 20 months. MF Global became the eighth largest bankruptcy in U.S. history during Corzine's tenure there. Senator Bozeman says there are plenty of questions to be answered about the loss of $2 billion.
I think we would like to know what has happened, and then also try and put in place in the future so that these kind of things can't happen again. Really understand what the actions were that made it such that potentially a lot of very innocent people have lost a significant amount of money, and then again protect from that happening in the future.
The testimony is scheduled for Tuesday in Washington, D.C.
One of Arkansas's most venerable landmarks will make a nod to the changing way people communicate next year. Oaklawn Racetrack in Hot Springs will allow patrons to place wagers from anywhere in the park using their smartphone or iPad. Jennifer Hoyt, who is with Oaklawn, says if you want to bet, you'll be able to do so without going to the betting windows.
Kind of really allows the fans that like to get that last-minute look at how a horse is warming up on the track or in the paddock. And sometimes you just see a horse that just strikes you, and you're not near a line, a mutual line. So now all you need is your smartphone, and you can place a bet.
The new system will be in place by the beginning of the 2012 live racing season. The service will be free, but will require a $20 minimum bet.
The University of Arkansas hockey team skates back into action this weekend in Springdale. The Razorbacks host Missouri State tonight at 7:30 and Vanderbilt tomorrow night at 7:30. Both games will be at the Jones Center for Families. These are Arkansas's last home games until late January.
And the former dean of the University of Arkansas School of Law will receive the American Bar Association Spirit of Excellence Award for promoting a more racially and ethnically diverse legal profession. Cynthia E. Nance, who now serves as the Nathan G. Gordon Professor of Law at the University of Arkansas, will be recognized at the American Bar Association mid-year meeting in New Orleans on February 4th. This is Ozarks at Large. In just a few minutes, the story of a new and different movie house that's coming to Fort Smith. Christina did that story. First, however, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know, it is about to be Christmas. You're aware of that.
Oh, yes.
It's getting close.
So it can't be a Chinese menu, I guess. This week, you can choose from the Every Time a Bell Rings menu,
mm-hmm.
the Do You Hear What I Hear menu,
mm-hmm.
or the Bah Humbug menu.
Scrooge makes a visit. Okay. What are we going to start with?
We're going to start with Every Time a Bell Rings.
An angel gets its wings.
In this case, every time a bell rings, there's some kind of iconic leg lamp and a Christmas story.
Standards. Gotcha.
Yes. Obviously, A Christmas Story is based on the 1983 film set in the 1940s when all Ralphie wanted was an official Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle.
Now, am I correct? You have told me that you have not seen this movie?
Never seen the movie.
That's crazy.
Okay, thank you, Christina. Yeah. I got some backup on that.
But I have now seen the play at Rogers Little Theater.
Right.
What'd you
and
think?
It's wonderful. I think it's great. I think you need to go see it at 7 o'clock today and tomorrow or 2 o'clock Sunday because that's all of it there is. And if you went up a little early on Saturday, mm-hmm. you could go to the Rogers Historical Museum where they've got the Hawkins House decorated in kind of a spoof.
Kind of an homage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Where instead of getting the leg lamp, the man of the house won a stuffed rooster.
Right.
So
same sort of idea.
Yeah. Museums open 10 to 5 on Saturday. Showtime is 7 o'clock for Rogers Little Theater, 2 o'clock on Sunday. Tickets are $7.50 to $15. On a completely different note, Mark Landon Smith, David Sedaris' script, The Santa Land Diaries.
This weekend only.
If you've ever read this essay about being an elf at Macy's at Christmas as a middle-aged adult, it's kind of heartbreakingly hilarious, kind of painfully hilarious. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the play will be the same way, not intended for children. 7:30 today and tomorrow at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville. Tickets are $12. And the reference that we started out with, It's a Wonderful Life, Theater Squared's brand new adaptation of another iconic Christmas classic, let's see, 7 actors, 64 roles.
About as many scenes.
About 30-some scenes. Beautiful set. Beautiful, beautiful set by a designer from Chicago. It is on 7:30 on Thursdays and Fridays, 2 and 7:30 on Saturdays, 2 and 7 on Sundays through January 1st, with additional shows on January 21st and no show on December 25th. 443-5600. Tickets start at $22.
Now, I'm going to guess that the Do You Hear What I Hear menu is about seasonal music.
Very good. He's caught on to this plan.
See? Okay, very good.
And we are starting with Christmas Pops with the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas. You know, if Paul Haas is conducting, there will be some surprises.
That's been the history.
It seems to be his modus operandi, and it'll be fun. There will also be the debut of the Sona Singers. Mm-hmm. And, of course, classics like O Come All Ye Faithful and the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah, which is where the Sona Singers come in. Showtime is 7:30 on Saturday at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $25. Or you can go to the Arts Center of the Ozarks Saturday evening for Merry Music and Holiday Cheer, a performance by their youth choir and their community chorale. Tickets are $7 to $12. Or you can go to the Alma Performing Arts Center Saturday night for Stars from American Idol Celebrate Christmas.
Okay.
Huh?
Alexis Grace from Season 8, Michael Sarver from Season 8, David Hernandez from Season 7, and Lakeisha Jones from Season 6. I have no idea what I just said because I don't watch the show.
But these were all people who were on American
Idol?
Yes, okay.
Like made it to TV. And they are performing at 8 o'clock Saturday at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $20 to $30. Still on the Hill is performing Saturday at Good Folk. They're sold out.
Okay.
Oh, just wanted to mention
that. So this is just for your information.
This is the coal in your stocking. Gotcha. They're sold out. And there is a musical holiday concert with the Arkansas Winds at 3 o'clock Sunday at the Art Center of the Ozarks, and it's free.
All right.
And then there's the Bah Humbug menu.
What do you think that is?
Has nothing to do with Christmas.
Bingo.
All right.
She is correct.
So these are not necessarily Scrooge people.
No, just people who aren't quite up to their beady little eyeballs
sure.
in the Christmas spirit.
Okay.
So, there's a book signing tonight at 7 o'clock with Joe Neal, who has a new book called In the Province of Birds.
Yes.
Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. The Last Performances of Wit.
Yes.
Which they call a surprisingly funny play about cancer. Mm-hmm. I promise you, I will not be there. 8 o'clock today and Saturday, 2 o'clock Sunday, White Auditorium at Northwest Arkansas Community College.
I'd really like to make time this weekend to see that.
It is a wonderful show. Some things you just can't handle.
Right.
Tickets are $6 to $8 with a dollar discount for donating a canned food item. Second Saturday gallery stroll in Eureka Springs.
But I bet there will be some holiday flavor with that.
Well, I'm sure there will.
Yes.
And some Christmas shopping. But
yes.
You don't have to feel
right.
Christmassy
right.
to do it. 6 to 9 o'clock Saturday. The Fayetteville Half Marathon. Mm-hmm. Is it Sunday or Saturday?
Well, there are events both Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
The half marathon itself, the 13.1 mile race, that's Sunday.
Okay.
It's going to be warmer this year than it was last year when the wind chill was like 2 when people started.
At 7:30 o'clock in the morning, good. You go do that. Have fun. John McDonnell Outdoor Track at the University of Arkansas. Entry fees are between $15 and $90. You can find out more at Fayetteville Half, HALF.com. On Sunday, Treasured Stories. These are stories by Eric Carle by Mermaid Theater of Nova Scotia. They've been at the Walton Arts Center before. Showtime is 1 o'clock and tickets are $8 to $16. And finally, Susan Young from the Shiloh Museum will be talking about Ernie Dean's Benton County.
Ah.
At the Benton County Historical Society meeting 2:30 at the 1866 Schoolhouse in Bentonville. It's free.
That
How could
place
you not love that?
Tomorrow?
That's on Sunday at 2:30.
Gotcha. All right.
And you can find out more Christmas events in What's Up, in all the daily papers, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Democrat Gazette, because they're still going on everywhere.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz, every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's program, we'll hear music from West Coast drummer Donald Bailey, pianist Tommy Flanagan, and vocalist Mark Pompey. We'll hear from Tia Fuller as well and Cassandra Wilson, and some Joey DeFrancesco on the Hammond B3 organ. This and much more Friday night at 10 p.m. on Shades of Jazz.
In a strip mall on Rogers Avenue sits an empty Circuit City building. But inside, there are signs that it will not remain empty for long. Construction has begun on what, come mid-February, will be the movie lounge. Dwight Curry and his sister, Lynn Curry Weidman, have long been in the lodging business. Originally from Fort Smith, they decided it was time to do something different in their hometown. Bringing something truly unique to the city, they are hoping to fill a niche with their upscale entertainment house. From an office inside the construction zone, Movie Lounge General Manager Greg Fernholz says the venture is difficult to describe.
You can't compare it, so I can't say this is like this that a lot of people have seen. It's fairly groundbreaking. It's not totally new. It's happening in cities. The major theater companies are taking a hard look at this for the same reasons. And this isn't. Although this is somewhat new, it's also very successful in a lot of markets.
Fernholz says that they have traveled to many like venues across the nation, movie houses that also serve restaurant-quality food and beverages, and with a distinctive twist to the films they show. While there isn't a clear-cut model on how to build a business of this nature, Curry, Weidman, and Fernholz have taken the best of the best from what they've seen to create something that will be an asset to the area and to the state, as there is nothing like the movie lounge in all of Arkansas. Owner Lynn Curry Weidman says that they are taking a different approach to the business.
What we've seen is most of them are more theaters that are trying to get into the restaurant business and add that to it. And we're going about it from the opposite direction, so we feel like it'll be a little step above.
Going about it from the food side, ads were placed in national publications. Chef Will Greenwood responded to that ad. He has cooked for both President Bushes, and you may have seen him on shows like Good Morning America. Greenwood says the ad was interesting and elicited his response.
Probably did it more out of just curiosity, but once I got involved in it and saw the potential and certainly got to meet everybody, I think the excitement level certainly rose quite a bit. So, it was kind of an amazing situation because I never thought I'd come back to an area that I was born in.
Originally from eastern Oklahoma, Greenwood says that he was fortunate to mature during the so-called culinary explosion. He has also served as executive chef at such places as the Jefferson Hotel in D.C. and the Sunset Grill in Nashville. Few chefs of this caliber are working in the Fort Smith area. Bringing something fresh to the palates of the residents while remaining familiar is a goal of Greenwood's.
Food that's contemporary in feel but not so far into an explosion of culinary terms that people don't know what it is. I want to have food that feels familiar when you're ordering it and also when you're tasting it, but still at the same time, presentation-wise, is very stunning. And hopefully taste sensations are a little bit different. If I was to make an apple pie, I would try to make something totally different, maybe an apple tart with a cheddar cheese crust and cinnamon ice cream and, try to take it into a whole new level of apple pie. So you know what apple pie is, but you're not going to have ever experienced my taste sensations of apple pie. It's really trying to take flavor profiles that are very familiar, but then take it to something where they can't get it anywhere else in the vicinity. So I don't want anybody to ever come here and say, oh, I had this dish down at so-and-so. It's going to be a whole new experience.
Greenwood has not decided on a clear-cut definition for this culinary style, but says it is somewhere between contemporary and familiar food with a twist. The movie lounge general manager, Greg Fernholz, says they wish to offer limitless possibilities to their patrons.
What we're hoping to accomplish is that
it's not limited to one thing, meaning some of these movie lounges or movie theaters that have what entailed an experience where you had a set meal or a certain type of dinner and film, and it was at a given price, and people went there on occasions when they can afford that. So the theaters, you can buy your theater ticket and have traditional popcorn and a soda and some candy brought to your table through quarter, or you can have versions of the menu, and it's similar to what's in the dining room, but due to the constraints of lighting inside a theater, and we don't want a lot of waiters going in and out and disrupt people, it's somewhat small sizes of things in the that are found in the restaurant. So if there's steak items in the restaurant, perhaps it'll be kebabs and that kind of steak, you know, things that you could eat in the dark a little bit better.
Housed in a former Circuit City, the 24,000-square-foot building has ample space for a full-size restaurant, complete with exhibition kitchen, full bar, and a stage. Though not much more than an empty room now, evidence can be seen on the walls of one of the three theaters, in the form of lines drawn like stair steps, what will soon be rows of seats. And about those seats? Not your typical theater chairs.
It would look somewhat like smaller recliner, about that size, meaning that they're in pairs, they're high-backed, they recline a bit with the pressure of your body because we don't want people reclining fully back into the row that's behind them. On your arm is a swing-out table, somewhat like you see on some airplanes, but much larger. So it would flip out and over, and it's about 11 by 17 inches, and it includes a drink holder to it also. So there's ample room to put food. There's not the type of room, and this is where the menu comes into place, to put several courses, like a steak, a salad, and soup. It would be difficult, first of all, in the dark to manage that.
But what will viewers be watching from their plush recliners? Back in the office, Fernholtz says the answer is not that simple.
The entertainment part is very, very complex, and we will have alternate content, which now is things that are still by major studios with well-known actors. They're just films that are not always seen on the your big screen, 15 screen theaters, we don't intend to compete with those. Those are, you know, for a whole different market, action films and other things like that. We're with our 85 seats and our approach to wine. You know, people come and have a meal, have a cocktail and things, and while still seeing a good movie. We're not in this to compete against the giant Hollywood theaters.
He says they will show some slightly current blockbusters, perhaps a month or so after they have hit the mainstream theaters. Films shown will also include independent, foreign, nostalgic, and themed, say Christmas movies around the holidays. And silent films will be played in the restaurant when a band is not present. The movie lounge will also offer space for events, from an intimate birthday party to a large-sized corporate event. More information can be found on the web at movieloungefsm.com.
For nearly 50 years, the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Northwest Arkansas has been a tax-exempt organization helping its members make informed decisions about end-of-life matters. Members pay a one-time fee of $30 for a lifetime membership that entitles them to an annual update of local funeral pricing and information about funeral laws and regulations. Jerry Jansma is the president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Northwest Arkansas. He says part of the mission of the group is education.
We provide education about availability of funeral services. We publish every year new information that pertains to rules and regulations regarding funeral services. We also publish a price list for local funerals, funeral homes, and our members thereby are better informed about availability and services.
When you talk about funeral rules, regulations, what sort of thing are we talking about? Because I think most people don't really think about funeral laws,
That's right.
rules, and regulations.
That's right. That's right. Funeral regulations are generally governed by state law, And that, of course, in our, for our case, is Arkansas. The disposition of a body in the state of Arkansas must be conducted by a licensed funeral director. That's the law. I can actually quote passages from the code if you like to hear it, but that's a sum and substance of the law. So those are the rules. There are, of course, conditions that have to be met, but the funeral directors know what those are. But funerals cannot be conducted willy-nilly by persons who want to choose to do their own, become their own funeral directors. That's not a permissible operation.
Right. But after that, the options are wide?
The options consist basically of two choices, burial and cremation. There's an outside possibility that's rare. But one could donate a body to medical science, but that's fairly unusual. And the ultimate result from that is eventually cremation, because once the body parts are satisfactorily used for medical science, then they're disposed of by cremation.
Part of your mission also is education, that someone, while they're alive, can make most, if not all, of these decisions, have them written down, and have them followed.
Absolutely. There's a variety of things people could do and we think should do before they meet the final condition of life, which is death, and that is have some preparation made for the choice they want to make about the disposition of their body, whether it's cremation or burial. They can choose, they can pick a funeral home if they like. They should leave the information available to anyone who will be taking care of their final remains, a family member, a close friend, whatever that turns out to be. We also encourage people to make advance preparations for the legal issues that arise on death, inheritance of property, and that sort of thing. So,
somewhat like a will, but you can map out that I wish this to happen, and it has to then legally be followed?
That's right. There is a relatively new, I think it was enacted last year by the state legislature, a law governing the advance directive for the disposition of your body upon death. You fill this out, very simple form. You sign it. It's witnessed, and that has to be honored by whoever it is that will be overseeing the disposition of your remains. Heretofore, there were disputes about whether or not a person who suggested that he wanted to be cremated and then a family member may have said, no, I don't think he wanted to be cremated. So this makes it clear cut. Once you fill out the form for an advance directive, your wishes must be followed.
You've been with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Northwest Arkansas for a while.
Oh, yes.
A member.
Oh, yes. I've been a member for, I'm going to say, 40 years or more. I became a member when I was a graduate student here in the 1960s, and my wife did as well.
That's interesting. I mean, many of us, a lot of people don't want to talk about it, or at least don't want to take the step, it seems, sometimes to, you know, even though
That's right.
It's 100% of us will eventually be gone, will eventually die. A lot of us don't want to talk about it or think that seriously about it.
Well, that's exactly right, Kyle. That's one of the reasons that making our membership attractive to people is not as easy as it might seem. People acknowledge that death is inevitable. They know that they should make preparation, but they're reluctant to do it. So we want people to feel more comfortable about it, and that's part of our educational goal.
So if someone is listening to this conversation that we're having for the Alliance and they join, what happens next?
Well, they immediately become members and they will be in our rolls. They will be eligible for the discounted prices at local funeral homes. When we publish our newsletters, they will receive one along with a price list. We have an annual membership meeting at which we discuss topics of general interest that have to do with end-of-life matters, perhaps legal issues, perhaps I think this coming year we'd like to have an assembly and a discussion of hospice and how hospice works. So there are many related issues that we take up as part of of matters that concern people in end-of-life matters.
So if someone is listening to this conversation that we're having for the Alliance and they join, what happens next?
Well, they immediately become members, and they will be in our rolls. They will be eligible for the discounted prices at local funeral homes. When we publish our newsletters, they will receive one along with a price list. We have an annual membership meeting at which we discuss topics of general interest that have to do with end-of-life matters, perhaps legal issues, perhaps I think this coming year we'd like to have an article, an assembly and a discussion of hospice and how hospice works. So there are many related issues that we take up as part of the matters that concern people in end-of-life matters.
Jerry Jansma is the president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Northwest Arkansas. The organization has been around nearly 50 years. You can learn more about the national or local organization at funerals.org. You can reach the local group by calling 444-0470. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large, and it's time for a trivia question. We are giving away two tickets to the 7 o'clock showing of Anat Cohen at the Walton Arts Center tonight.
That's tonight. So if you don't have plans and you want to see Anat Cohen at the 7 o'clock show, hope you're a hockey fan. We mentioned earlier that the Razorback hockey team is on the ice tonight and tomorrow night. Made me think of the Stanley Cup, which is awarded to now the winner of the National Hockey League season, right? You can trace the Stanley Cup back to 1893, and it's gone through different incarnations of who wins or whatever. A Canadian team won every Stanley Cup from 1893 to 1917. It wasn't until 1917 that a team based in the United States won possession of the cup. Was that team the Boston Bruins, the New York Rangers, or the Seattle Metropolitans?
Okay. I have my guess.
Okay. Hang on to that guess. If you have a guess, 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF. All correct answers go into the ceramic cow. One winner will get two tickets to tonight's 7 o'clock showing or performance of Anat Cohen.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 9th of December, 2011. It's the birthday of the poet Lanny Adams, born Brooklyn, 1899. She went to Barnard College, fell in with a group of girls who called themselves the Ashcan Cats, included Margaret Mead. They bobbed their hair, they loved Edna St. Vincent Millay, and often when they went out to eat, they'd bring a candle, put it on its side, and light it at both ends while they recited Millay's famous poem, "My candle burns at both ends, it will not last the night, but ah, my foes and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light." It's the birthday of the poet John Milton, born London, 1608, ruined his eyesight, staying up late, reading by poor light. And from his 40s on, Milton had to dictate his writing to a secretary, often one of his daughters. It's the birthday of Jean de Brunhoff, born in Paris, 1899. He was living in Paris with his wife Cécile, a pianist, when their two young sons got sick. And to amuse the boys, Cécile told them a story about a baby elephant from the jungle who sets out for the city after his mother is shot by a hunter. The children loved the story. They told their father about it. So he, an artist, decided to illustrate it. His brother was a publisher, and that's how the story of Babar came to appear, 1931. It was a big bestseller. Brunhoff wrote six more Babar books. He was working on the last one when he died of tuberculosis at the age of 37. One of his sons, Laurent, was also an illustrator, so he eventually took over the franchise. It's the birthday of the writer and folklorist Joel Chandler Harris, born Eatonton, Georgia, 1845, a reporter for the Atlanta Constitution, where he first wrote down the stories that he had heard from slaves as a young man, the Uncle Remus stories. Much to his surprise, the stories were popular, and he wrote a book, Uncle Remus, His Songs and His Sayings. It was a bestseller in 1880 and ever since. And it was on this day, 1854, Alfred Lord Tennyson's poem The Charge of the Light Brigade was published in the London Examiner, describing a disastrous charge by British cavalry 6 weeks earlier October 25th, in the Crimean War. It was all a misunderstanding between officers who disliked each other, and so they did a poor job passing on orders, with the result that one of the generals, confused, led the Light Brigade into battle against a fort, and out of 600 British soldiers, at least 110 died. There were reporters and photographers at the scene who saw the whole thing, and in about 3 weeks it was in all the papers for everyone in Britain to see, including Tennyson, who sat right down and wrote six stanzas beginning half a league, half a league, half a league onward, that became his poem, The Charge of the Light Brigade. Here's a poem for today by Alden Nowlin, Andy Shaw. Three generations, and he loathed them all, bought meat from Andy Shaw, who clerked for Edder, working 6 days a week for 30 years, hating his job and looking for a better. He never married, and he blamed his wage, never went more than 20 miles from town, and every year came earlier to work, cursing the butcher shop that tied him down. When Charlie Edder died, his son came home to run the store, so Andy got his pay. Some claim the old man cried, offered to work for less or nothing if they'd let him stay. Alden Nowlin's poem Andy Shaw from What Happened When He Went to the Store for Bread, published by the Thousands Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Betsy Alistair, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Okay, time for the answer. But first, you said you had a guess. Oh, let me tell people what the question was again, just in case they didn't hear or forgot. What was the first United States-based team to ever win the Stanley Cup? It happened in 1917. The choices were Boston Bruins, New York Rangers, or the Seattle Metropolitans.
Well, I thought it was Seattle.
You are correct.
Yay!
I don't think many people would think that because the Seattle Metropolitans have not existed since almost 1917.
I was just thinking it's close to Canada.
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart. They defeated the Montreal team in 1917. For the record, the Boston Bruins, did not win a cup until 1929. The New York Rangers won their first cup in 1928. And again, the Razorback hockey team tonight at 7:30 against Missouri State at the Jones Center for Families. Tomorrow night, 7:30 against Vanderbilt. We'll pick the winner for the Annette Cohen tickets, not Cohen tickets, in just a moment.
Theater Squared continues its season 6 with the premiere of a new stage adaptation of It's a Wonderful Life. It's running now through New Year's Day at Walton Art Center's Nadine Baum Studio. In this play, based on the film, George Bailey is drowning in debt and despair on Christmas Eve 1945, until he receives an unlikely visitor. Tickets and information are available at theater2.org or 443-5600.
The Fayetteville Half Marathon is tomorrow and Sunday. Saturday features the Magic Mile, a one-mile downhill race, plus activities for all ages. Sunday features the half-distance marathon, the 5K, and the one-mile fun run and walk. Sponsors are welcome. Volunteers are needed. Registration, more information available on the web at FayettevilleHalf.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM Fayetteville, serving the communities of Rogers, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, and Vandervoort.
Vandervoort. Love it. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
And Ithi Agnihotri-Middleker and I will be with you Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large.